You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
We're back here with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show, where we bring you the best of Israeli sports all the way up to Nahariya, down south, Eilat, and all the great cities in between Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and many, many more. And if you like this podcast, and I know that you do, make sure you subscribe to us, leave us a five-star rating, write us a nice review. Check us out, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us. Check us out on social media, at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com. For the latest and greatest news, both in English and in Hebrew, we deliver it to you in both languages. We are the only sports website in Israel that does both. And we have a wonderful guest on for our 450th episode. Yes, episode number 450, we are here. And it is none other than Jeffrey Gurok. Of course, Jeffrey Gurok has put out a brand new book entitled Marty Glickman, The Life of an American Jewish Sports Legend. It's put out by NYU Press. Just came out a couple months ago. And I think Marty Glickman has an incredible story and, of course, a very famous personality, both in the New York City area and, of course, beyond, as an athlete, as an announcer. And, of course, Jeffrey Gurok will tell us much, much more about Marty Glickman and about the book that just came out. Jeffrey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on your show, Josh. So I'm very excited that you're broadcasting Israeli sports and to not only Israeli audiences, but I imagine internationally. So congratulations on what you've been doing.
Thank you very much. And of course, Marty Glickman is definitely a persona that people here that will be listening to this podcast are very well aware of. Now, you just came out with this book this past October. And you're talking about a person here, Marty Glickman, Jeffrey, that is, obviously known, throughout the broadcasting world as one of the great pioneers in sports broadcasting, New York Knicks, New York Giants, we're talking about the football Giants, and as well as, just being this, personality around the sports world. He's been, enshrined in various Hall of Fames. He has, he wore his Judaism on his shoulder for sure. And of course, he is also known as being one of the runners that was supposed to compete in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. And he, along with Sam Stoller, were, left out at the last minute from the competition and did not end up running. Of course, we know that Jesse Owens did run and won numerous gold medals, and that was the Hitler Olympics, as we all know, the Nazi Olympics in that aspect. But my first question to you, Jeffrey, is why did you decide to write this book? You're an author. You've come out with numerous books on various different subjects. Why Marty Glickman?
Well, there are two dimensions to the book, two things that intrigue me. First, there's a sports angle, but I think more importantly, there's a Jewish angle. As far as the sports angle is concerned, I'm 74 years old, and Marty Glickman was the voice of my youth. I was one of those kids who listened to Marty Glickman with a transistor radio, with a plug in my ear, under the covers at night. And correct, he did 2,000 games and events, including a roller derby and wrestling and the Trotters. But of course, he's best known for doing the football Giants and then the Jets. And of course, the New York Knicks. And I was someone who really loved Marty Glickman as an announcer. In fact, one time, listening to a game, he said that the game was very close. And he said, if you're within the sound of my voice, open the windows to your tenements or your apartments and yell, go Giants, go, go Giants, go. So I did that. My father said, what in the world are you doing? I said, Marty Glickman told me to do it, okay? Marty Glickman was the voice of my youth, of so many people of my generation who live in America. Some live in Israel now, and of course, they relate well to it. When I played basketball in the streets, if I made a basket, I would say swish, because Marty Glickman said swish. Long before Marv Albert, who was his prime disciple, said yes, or or Ian Green said, book it. And Mike Green, who does the next today, said, bang, you had this onomatopoeia of Marty Glickman. So Marty Glickman was very important to me as a sports fan. In fact, many of your listeners would recall that back in the 50s and 60s, the New York Giants and the National Football League did not televise home games because they wanted to build up the listenership or the viewership of the games. So you listen to Marty Glickman on the radio. So a friend of mine a few years ago told me he was driving on the Sawmill River Parkway, that's north of Riverdale where I live, and it was 2 minutes to go in the game. And Marty Glickman says, listen, the very close game, if you're within the sound of my voice, pull off the road. I don't want to cause any accidents. And he said, people are pulling off the road. Now, I thought he was kidding me until I found two other sources. Mike Burke, who later on would become the president of the New York Yankees, says, I was driving on the parkway and Marty Glickman told me to pull off the road. So I pulled off the road. And then I interviewed Dave Cohen, who would broadcast the Yankees later on. He said, I was in Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn. And Marty Glickman told me, pull off the road, pull off the road. I was in Flatbush Avenue. I pulled off three different lanes from the left lane to the right lane off the road because Marty Glickman was that important. So part of the book that people of my age can relate to is the sports story of a fan, of someone who loved Marty Glickman and who could relate to the broadcasts that he did. But Josh, there's a more important aspect to Marty Glickman's life, and you touched on it in the fine introduction, and that is Marty Glickman, for me, was emblematic of the life of a second-generation Jew growing up in Brooklyn who tries to make it in the American world. And things went very well for Marty Glickman in his life until what he called the meeting in August 1936 at the Berlin Games. Mm-hmm. He saw very quickly, Marty Glickman grows up in a neighborhood in Flatbush, which had Italians and Germans and Irish, no blacks. It was a segregated neighborhood. He's very comfortable among his own kind as New Yorkers. He goes to James Madison High School, one of the elite high schools in Brooklyn. And he's in a school which was predominantly Jewish. So he's very comfortable in his own skin as an American Jew. And he's very successful both as a runner, a track man, but also as a football player. In fact, Josh, he's so good and he's so famous that as a senior, he played in a Brooklyn football championship game against Sid Luckman, who was at Erasmus Hall High School. They played in Ebbets Field of Blessed Memory.
Wow.
20,000 fans. That's how big he was as an athlete, as a high school student. But let me just go on very quickly. He goes to Syracuse University, and I'm using Glickman's story. This is very important. Ultimately, my book is not a sports book. It's a book about the life of American Jews and how they lived their lives during the so-called interwar period. He goes to Syracuse. Syracuse has quotas against Jews, but he's admitted. He's admitted because he could be a great football player. He could be a great runner for Syracuse. In fact, he's recruited by 14 different schools want Marty Glickman to come to their university. But he goes to Syracuse because a group of Jewish fraternity brothers, the SAMEs, they're called, SAM fraternity, believe that if Marty Glickman comes to the school and he's successful, this will help all Jews get into Syracuse and make life better for Jews who are on campus. I don't know much Latin, but he's persona non grata honoris causa, which means person not wanted, but he's revered, he's extolled because he's so successful as an athlete. But his great dream is as you indicated at the outset, to go to Berlin and to compete in the 1936 Olympics. So here's the scene. He gets to Berlin. He gets to the Olympic Village. He sees Nazi guards. They salute him as an American runner. He salutes them back. He talks some Yiddish to them. They speak German to him. He doesn't experience anti-Semitism. At one point, he and another Jewish athlete named Herman Goldberg, but I bet you don't know there was a baseball game, an exhibition game held at the Berlin Games in front of thousands of German fans. Oh, they were so bored by the game, they walked out. Herman Goldberg is the catcher for the American team. And he and Marty hitch a ride to the Olympic Stadium to watch some events. They hitch a ride with a uniformed Wehrmacht officer who's so thrilled to have these American athletes in his car that he asks for their autograph. And they scribble their names because they're a little uptight about being Jewish, but everything's going very well for him. He's skirting around the anti-Semitism that other Jews face. But then he comes face to face with this anti-Semitism, as you correctly point out, a day before the signature event of the Olympics, the last event, a 4x100-meter race. He and Sam Stoller, the other Jew who's designated to run in this event in front of 80,000 fans, including Adolf Hitler, Hermann Goering, and others, in walk the coaches who say, Glickman, you're out, Stoller, you're out, because we heard a rumor that the Germans have been hiding some great athletes who are going to run in that race. So instead of you guys running, we want Ralph Metcalf and Jesse Owens to compete. Now, Owens jumps up to his credit and says, hey, listen, I have 3 gold medals. I don't need a 4th. Let these boys run. But they're unable to convince the trainers and the coaches. And the man behind this, Josh, who's doing this, is a man named Avery Brundage. May I say Avery Brundage, Yimach Shemo?
An American.
Avery Brundage has a lot to do with this story.
Right.
He's an American Nazi. He's friendly with the Germans, and he doesn't want to embarrass Adolf Hitler by having a Jew win a gold medal in the signature event, as I said a moment ago, in front of 80,000 fans. And I want my readers and your listeners to know that Avery Brundage is a significant figure in anti-Semitism that affects Jews, not only in 1936. Josh, you know where I'm going, I'm sure. Because 36 years later, the Olympics returned to Germany, not to Berlin, but to Munich, and 11 Israeli athletes are murdered by Palestinian terrorists. And Avery Brundage is no longer the American head of the American Olympic Committee. He's head of the International Olympic Committee.
The big boss.
Pardon me?
He's the big boss.
He's the big boss. And he says after one day of mourning, the games must go on. So that's Avery Brundage. There's one other piece about Avery Brundage I must mention. On vacation last year, I read a wonderful biography by David Marinus. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author who did biographies of the Obamas and of Clinton, and he did a book about Jim Thorpe.
Right.
In 1912, Jim Thorpe was the most outstanding athlete in America. Some people say he was the best athlete in the 20th century that America produced. He won some gold medals in the Stockholm Games, and Avery Brundage, who was an athlete, he's part of the group which strips Jim Thorpe of his gold medals because they accuse him, perhaps correctly, of having played a few of exhibition games or semi-pro baseball games. So it's not only a Jewish story, it's a story of racism and anti-Semitism, and that's That's his first, Marty Glickman's first encounter with anti-Semitism. And there's a movie, Josh, called Race, which profiles the life of Jesse Owens. And I saw the movie, and I was very troubled by one of the scenes. There's a scene where Owens wins the race, and Stoller and Glickman jump out of the stands, and they shout, USA, USA, and they hug Jesse Owens, etc. That didn't happen. Stoller and Glickman stand alone. So this is not a sports story. This is a story about anti-Semitism. And you know that your listeners should realize that the IOC, the AOC, the Olympic Committee, has never been favorably disposed towards Jews and now towards Medinat Yisrael. And you know more about this than I do because you cover Israeli sports. They are anti-Semitic. And I have to say that a year after 1972, and the atrocity at the Olympic Games, another organization that is not particularly favorably disposed towards Jews, it's called the United Nations, defines Zionism as racism. I had a professor many years ago at Columbia, and his name was Nathan Huggins, black historian. And he used to say all the time that for minority groups in America, wars and sports are community-defining situations. If you're allowed to play for your team, play for your country, play for your city, it's a big statement of where you are within that society. And of course, as a black historian, his story was Jack Roosevelt Robinson desegregating the armed forces in playing Major League Baseball in 1947, 2 years before Harry S. Truman desegregates the armed forces. So you see, this is not about sports. It uses sports as a metaphor for understanding Jewish history. And it's more than the broadcaster and more than the athlete. It's the story of Jews in the 20th century. You know from your work that Arab athletes receive stipends from their government for refusing to compete against Israeli athletes.
Of course.
So that tradition continues.
Yeah, they get rewarded. Of course, we're on here with Jeffrey Gurok, the author of the brand new book, Marty Glickman, The Life of an American Jewish Sports Legend, NYU Press. Now, I know that there is, near the end of the book, you devote a lot of time towards the whole issue of Avery Brundage. And it's brutal when you think of it that here he is, the American that is going against his own country, in essence, due to his personal anti-Semitism. And the fact that, I think you really delineate this properly in the book, that Marty Glickman, really built the case. He spent a while not talking about it and then built the case, and the case was built around it. He was then, rewarded much later on. Talk a little bit about, Marty Glickman's feelings as the years went on after, even much after that he was already this famous announcer, that, this Olympic issue hung over him, obviously like a very, very dark cloud.
Well, listen, when the Olympics are over, Glickman comes back to New York and he experiences additional anti-Semitism, which I want to comment on for a moment. He goes to the New York Athletic Club to work out with a Gentile colleague of his, teammate of his. And he gets to the doors of the New York AC, which is on Central Park South, this prestigious WASP area. And he's turned away because he's a Jew. So he experiences this anti-Semitism in his own life. Perhaps we'll talk for a few moments about his career and the anti-Semitism that he faced in his career. But as he grew older, he became more and more aware of what he would call a prequel to the Holocaust. He would often say that no one died as a result of what happened to me and to poor Sam Stoller, but it was indicative of where Jews faced, what Jews faced during that time period. And it's only later on where he hooks up. Well, two things happened. One, in the 1980s, he's invited back to Germany, to Berlin, and because one of the networks is doing a show about Jesse Owens, and he walks into this Olympic stadium, which is empty, and he looks up at the box where Hitler and Goering and Goebbels and these others sat, and he screams out, "I'm here, you're no longer here." And it is an important moment for him in his life. And then soon thereafter, in the last 15 years of his life, he hooks up with the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum and travels the country talking about his experiences in Berlin and what it meant to him in terms of his life. So this problem of responding to anti-Semitism bothered him for the longest time. But as he grew older, he became aware that we're talking about a new generation of Jews and Christians who had to be educated about what happened in 1936 and 1972. 1972 was a very troubling moment for him when he watched these Israeli athletes being murdered, and the response of some of the broadcasters who said, "Hey, this is a great experience. These are the serene games of Munich." It's a question of Glickman feeling alone for the longest time, and only towards the end of his life did he come to realize how significant his story was. And that is a part of the legacy of Marty Glickman that is very important down to this very day.
You know, Jeffrey, talking about Marty Glickman as the announcer, and of course, you know, he was, so important to so many like yourself and others growing up in the New York City area. But he also, you know, made his mark on the future announcers. And you mentioned Marv Albert. And of course, there are many others, and there are many Jewish announcers. He also had a little bit of a tiff, I guess, of his own with Howard Cohen, or should we call him Howard Cosell, obviously a very famous announcer. And the fact that, and I think you make a very good point about it, you know, he wanted to wear that Judaism on his shoulder. He was proud. He was a proud Jew, and he didn't want to hide that fact. And you know, that was something, I guess, throughout you know, the United States, people had changed their Jewish name to, you know, to try to, you know, Gentilify it, as we'll call it. I wonder if today, you know, people are starting to feel the same way a little bit, knowing that there's such a huge rise in anti-Semitism, you know, with everything going on. And it's, you know, you look at New York City today, the horrible riots that are going on with pro-Hamas supporters. You see, you know, people are afraid. I've spoken to friends. A friend of mine was just in Israel last week from New Rochelle. He was telling me his daughter in high school just is beside herself. She's never experienced what anti-Semitism really is. She's, you know, gotten off of social media, and they're afraid. They're afraid to walk the streets. And this is New York City. This is the five boroughs, or, you know, Westchester, Greater New York, and people are afraid. Talk a little bit about that, you know, that issue with Marty. And then, you know, how do you see today also as being an impact of, you know, what is it like being a Jew, and where is society going, especially in that area of the world?
So let me say two things. First of all, as far as Howard Cosell is concerned, a lot's been written about Cosell and his name change, et cetera. Marty was wrong. Marty thought that Cosell had changed his name. In fact, the name was changed by the family before Howard Cosell became famous. But Marty Glickman believed that this was a statement of his separating himself from the Jewish community. You're 100% right. This was an era where there was all sorts of name changes on the part of Jews to fit in. And it's not only Jews. When Glickman wanted to be a nationally recognized broadcaster, again, we're New Yorkers. Well, you came from, I believe, from Canada, but
yeah,
I'm in
Montreal, but I lived in New York.
Yeah, okay, but you long time New York. He wanted to be more than just that, but the networks want him to change his name from Marty Glickman to Marty Manning, or Marty Mann, and he refuses to do so. I juxtapose, by the way, in the book, his experience with that of Bess Meyerson, a woman who is the same age, who grows up in the Bronx, and they pressure her to change her name, and she refuses. And but Marty Glickman has great difficulty within his industry. And you know what? For me, one of the saddest parts of that story is that when the National Basketball Association began, first it began as the BAA, Basketball Association of America. Marty Glickman was the national broadcaster, but he was taken off those games because they felt the moguls of basketball felt that they didn't want to, that America didn't want to hear the voice of a Jew with a Jewish name from New York, as we say in Peoria. And Josh, what makes me saddest is the two people who are instrumental in sidelining him again, now he's being sidelined, were Haskell Cohen, who was the publicist, and Maurice Puttelock, who was the president of the NBA. Such was the fear that Jews had that they wouldn't fit in. And I'm going to address contemporary anti-Semitism in one moment, but I want to say one other thing. I told this story, and it's in the book, to another broadcaster from New York named Sal Marciano. Sure. In fact, not only was Sal Marciano a disciple of Marty Glickman, but so was his daughter, Sam Marciano. Mm-hmm. And he was pressured. He grew up in the Red Hook section of Brooklyn to change his name because Marciano sounded like Rocky Marciano, Italian American. And he refused to change his name. And then he became famous, and he ran into his childhood hero, and that Frank Sinatra, who said, "I'm very proud of you, Sal, that you didn't change your name." So name change was another way of Jews seeing they didn't fit in to America. As far as the contemporary world is concerned, yes, we're living through a very difficult time, but I think there are several differences. Mm-hmm. First of all, in the sporting world of which we are part in America, it's been very good to see how many of the teams, how many of the leagues have flown Israeli flags. Now, yeah, it may have something to do with the fact that there's a lot of Jewish ownership in these teams. That's point number one. Point number two, with all the anti-Semitism, and I'm not a Pollyanna and I'm not dismissing it for a moment, the fact of the matter is that Jews today do not stand alone as much as they did in the 1930s and 1940s, the very different America. The third piece, and I guess ultimately I'm an optimist when I say this type of thing, is the fact that Jews today, unlike Jews in the 1930s, when we experience anti-Semitism, are more willing to speak out against it than we did in the past. So that's somewhat encouraging. Should we fight anti-Semitism? Absolutely. Should we be afraid of anti-Semitism? To be sure. But we also should feel that we're not nearly as alone as we were back then. That's what Marty Glickman and his generation felt, a sense of loneliness, a sense of being alone, a sense that no one cared about them. There are a lot of people in America who don't care about us. A lot of people in America don't care about Medina and Israel, but we have more allies than we did back then. And what we have to do is twofold. One, fight those who hate us, go to the rallies, contribute to Israel as best we can, but also embrace and reach out to good Christians who share our point of view. And the point we should make is that Israel's success and Israel's survival is not only an issue for Jews, it's an issue for the United States as well. So I think it's a more complicated issue. And you know what? At the end of the day, we are going through a difficult time, but this is not Kristallnacht. This is not Kristallnacht. It's a difficult time. We have to be aggressive in terms of our response and not as timid as the early generation was in response to anti-Semitism.
Of course, we're on here with Jeffrey Gurok, finishing off last few minutes. author of Marty Glickman, The Life of an American Jewish Sports Legend by NYU Press. There's a link in the post that you're going to see this podcast in, and you can click that and you'll be able to purchase the book. If you'd like to, it's great. I got to read it in about 24 hours, so I couldn't put it down. It was wonderful. And I want to thank you for sending me a copy very, very quickly. You know, Chris, today's generation, you didn't have to wait for the actual hard copy. You can read it online. So that was very good, and it was very exciting and very interesting. Who's going to be the next Marty Glickman? We've seen, you know, generations now of young Jewish broadcasters. You know, we have Marv Albert and his son Kenny Albert, of course, who is, you know, extremely, you know, well-versed. We see Ian Eagle. His son, Noah Eagle, now.
And Noah Eagle, his son is now brought to
26 years old, and he's doing NFL games. And he had rave reviews over the weekend. I think he did may have been his first NFL game with one of the major networks. Got rave reviews. So, you know, where do we see the future of Jews in broadcasting? Is this a place where we're going to continuously see, you know, Yidden going, you know, putting their... putting the pedal to the metal and trying to, you know, continue that legacy that Marty Glickman built?
Well, listen, he has many disciples out there, Jew and Gentile, and they have their disciples have disciples. If you talk about Marv Albert, Ian Eagle, Noah Eagle, and Kenny Albert, etc. So nobody has to change their name, okay? Nobody should be concerned that they sound like I sound like a New Yorker. If you think of Mike and the Mad Dog, neither of them Jewish. They do not sound like they came from Indiana. They came from New York. So it's an open field for that sort of activity. And, you know, by the way, Marty Glickman was also instrumental in the first women broadcasting football games. Mm-hmm. You have Gail Sterns, who did the first NFL game back 30 years ago. And just last week, I watched Beth Mowins broadcasting, also a disciple of Marty Glickman. You know, one of the joys of doing this book, incidentally, was I got a chance to interact with so many of these broadcasters, a number of whom want me to write their biographies. But you know what? I think the funniest and the most moving story about in the chapter called Marty as Mentor was his relationship with Bill Walton, the 6'11", 7-foot center, who your listeners know played for UCLA and then played for Portland Trail Blazers, won a championship for them, and played for the Boston Celtics. So the way I got to interview these people was by once I had one name, I asked for additional emails. Mm-hmm. I'd send them an email saying, my name is Jeff Barak, I'm a professor at Yeshiva University. I have a contract for this book. And then big letters, I'm not looking for any money. If you want to speak to me, get back to me. And they get back to me almost immediately. So Walton gets back to me. He says, I got to talk to you. Takes a while for us to connect. He says, Marty Glickman, this 5'8" guy, was one of the most important people in my entire life. I said, what about John Wooden, your great coach at UCLA? He says, yes, Wooden was very important, but so was Marty Glickman, because Walton revealed, and it's revealed also in an HBO special about him several months ago, that he stammered and stuttered as a young person. And Marty Glickman, who had the same problem as a young boy, helped him get over his problem. And today, Bill Walton is an Emmy-winning announcer. And when Glickman died, they interviewed John Wooden about Glickman. And they said, well, what'd you think of Marty Glickman? He says, oh, it was okay. Just okay. He said, it's a great line. He said, he taught Bill Walton to speak, and now Walton never shuts up. So his legacy is through generations of broadcasters. You know, Syracuse University is still a hotbed of broadcasting journalism. And as I speak to you from Riverdale, I look out my window, I can look towards Fordham University. Sure. In the last years of his life, Marty Glickman was Professor Marty Glickman teaching sports broadcasting. And every year they give an award to the outstanding young broadcaster who's in the program. So he has plenty of people who follow his footsteps, Jews and Gentiles. Nobody's changing their names. So we're in a difficult patch for us as American Jews. But Marty Glickman is someone who not only my generation is important, but you know what, Josh? If everybody forgets about all the broadcasting and all the broadcasters, what I want them most to remember is what happened to our people in 1936 and 1972 and beyond. That's a Jewish message, which I want Jews and Gentiles who read the books to this book to listen to and understand. So that's my ultimate purpose, because at the end of the day, I'm not a sports historian. I'm an American Jewish historian. I think sports is one of the ways, and you do it so well in your own way, it's one of the ways we can understand how Jews live their lives, both in this country, the United States, and in Medinat Yisrael, where you do your important work. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to talk about the book. I want people to read the book. And I have one last story to tell you that's not in the book.
Mm-hmm.
When the book was about to come out, I sent a copy, like I sent to you, to a rabbi in Los Angeles who was asked to speak to the USC track team that was about to go on a, this was July of 2023, was about to go to Auschwitz on a consciousness-raising tour. Most of the athletes were African-Americans. None of the athletes were Jews. And this rabbi took my book with him to discuss anti-Semitism to these young athletes. So I was very moved by that, but more moved by the fact that in 1936, the track coach of USC, his name was Dean Cromwell, another American Nazi, was one of the people who worked with Avery Brundage to keep Jews off the team. So now with all the problems we're facing, a team, no Jews, going to Auschwitz to remember what happened then and to be moved by that. And I gave a speech recently at a synagogue, and someone raised his hand and said, by the way, they just took Dean Cromwell's name off the track stadium. So my book didn't do it, but I'm this was so useful in that regard. So I hope to sell a lot of books. I hope people will read the book. But more importantly, the fact that a young rabbi can use my book to teach about anti-Semitism and about America today is the sort of thing that warms me at this point of view. So that's, to go back to your first question, why did I write the book? Because I love Marty Glickman, but I also love and do love American Jewish history.
There you have it, Jeffrey Gurok, author Marty Glickman, The Life of an American Jewish Sports Legend, NYU Press, available, of course, via the Sports Rabbi on the link. Great times, great interview, episode 450. Jeffrey, thanks so much for coming on board here today with the Sports Rabbi. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Be safe.